You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons with the one and only Coupon, NDB Media Sports.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Gal for All Seasons podcast featuring your Gal for All Seasons, me, on the NDB Media Sports Network and Block Talk Radio. In case you need to identify me, I'm Taryn the Coop Cooper. You can call me Coop. What's up this fine Wednesday? I'm just going to jump right in. Late last week, we had a monster deal, as they say up in New England, occur between the Boston Red Sox and the Los Angeles Dodgers. And on the surface, it seems to help the Dodgers now and the Red Sox later. But hey, I happen to think it was a great deal for the Sox. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome my friend Paul Francis Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully from Sully Baseball, to talk Red Sox and baseball in general. Sully, you with me?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Sorry, I dialed in a little bit late. I was having some phone trouble. Yay!
Well, perfect,
but Yes, I'm glad that you are able to join me. Jumping right into things, I mean, we're going to have a whole host of topics tonight, but I really wanted to get your feelings on the trade since you were really on the front line. You came out very vocally in support. I follow a lot of Red Sox tweets as well, and I have to say I didn't see many people crying over it. I mean, this is my take on it, and I don't follow the team nearly as closely as you do. Adrian Gonzalez is, he's a premier first baseman, but I feel like he never quite fit in to the team. Correct me if I'm wrong. Josh Beckett, was a World Series hero 5 years ago. And I guess memories are short term because he still has the scene of chicken and beer from the controversy last year. Carl Crawford was a huge disappointment. But overall, what is your take on why they were able to get the Dodgers to essentially take all the shit they no longer wanted?
Very strange day when it happened in a wonderful way. And in some ways, not to sort of make myself seem bigger than I really am, I'm in some ways the ideal guest to have on this because I'm a rabid Red Sox fan, but I happen to live about 10 minutes from Dodger Stadium. So I've seen the Dodgers side of this, and I've seen the Red Sox side of this. And I also have enough Giants fan friends who have their point of view of it. As a Red Sox fan, when I first saw it on the crawl as a possible trade, I thought it was a joke. I thought we were reading The Onion. And the reason is because, and I'm going to say something that is very, very insulting to your team, but I will insult another team in the process. That I felt that the Red Sox were going to fall into the same hole that the Mets and the Cubs fell into. Mm-hmm. And that is having losing seasons. The Red Sox are going to have a losing year this year, first losing year since 1997. And that there was danger of being a losing team, not embraced by the fans, and filled with contracts that they couldn't get rid of. You know, the way that Jason Bay is sort of floundering in the Mets organization, that like Oliver Perez and some of the other players who you eventually were able to just sort of run out, you know, the contracts were eventually going to run out. But I was looking up saying, God, we got four or five more years of Crawford, a few more years of Beckett. And I knew that Adrian Gonzalez's contract was going to become a behemoth. That it was going to be, oh God, he's still here. And it's, he's not worth $20 million. You know, that behemoth was going to happen. And suddenly, you wake up and the Red Sox don't have to worry about those players and don't have to worry about those contracts anymore. And like, for example, Crawford. Every move that in my head, okay, what could we do with Crawford? It was always like, well, maybe you could swap him for Vernon Wells. You know, bad contract for bad contract. Maybe a change of scenery. But the Dodgers took all of this on, and it gave the Red Sox an amazing opportunity to essentially reach over and hit the reset button and to acknowledge to the Red Sox fans, yeah, we kind of lost our way. We're putting a product on the field that you no longer like. And that's a big thing. The fans no longer like this team. You're starting to see patches of empty seats at Fenway Park. They keep listing them as sellouts. But the fact of the matter is, there's a lot of people not showing up. And I believe that the whole text message and all these off-the-field scandals and everything and who said this and who lied about that, who didn't show up for Charlie Teske's funeral, I think the Red Sox management was kind of like, you know what, F this team. And that's, there's a possibility with like, with a quarter of $1 billion taken off of the payroll to say, all right, maybe we can build from within and use that money to sign players from that'll fit in with the team better or develop players better. It's a great opportunity because it's better if you're going to have a losing record. You're better to have a losing record with kids because at least there's hope for the future. If you have a losing record and they were not and they're veterans and they're unlikable veterans. I mean, this team was one firecracker and bleach spray gun away from being the 1993 Mets.
All right. Well, you know, first things first, there's no way that you could possibly insult me as a fan or the Mets in general because, I mean, honestly, I have to give the Red Sox a lot of credit. Like you said, they were given a great opportunity to hit the restart button, and you and I had this conversation back in, gosh, I guess either December or January. I was on your show, though. And we were talking about how, you know what, this is a time, this is a great opportunity for the Mets to just bring a bunch of young guys up, have them play their hearts out. And I will have to say that warts and all, with the second half, there have been some great storylines with the Mets.
Right.
And, you know, after, you know, I have to give the Red Sox a lot of credit for, you know, the way that they lost last year, okay? And believe me, I identify with the last day of a season, losses. I mean, typically, you know, any fan of any team, if there is, you know, if it comes down to the last game of the season, chances are there were plenty of opportunities that you squandered, you know, whether it's in hockey, that's 82 games a year, or, you know, in baseball, it's 162 games a year. There could be plenty of games that you squandered along the way to have it come to that last game. There's no way it should. So in a way, you know, after that whole happened, you know, you lost Tito, brought in Bobby Valentine, and then there was the whole fried chicken and beer controversy, which, you know, everybody says was overblown and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? The one thing I will say that I'm kind of envious of right now of your team is that after 2007, you know, Mets fans were very brainwashed into thinking, you know what, this is a one, there's no way this is going to happen again. And when it was happening again, they were too far in to be like, okay, you know, we made a mistake, we're going to have to restart the whole thing. And in a way, a losing culture has kind of been accepted. And it's something that really pisses me off as a fan. I will have to say, hats off, man. You know what, they're not taking a losing culture sitting down. They're able to kind of say, you know what, we're going to restart this bullshit. Let's have at it.
Let me tell you another aspect to that. I think you're right. And one thing I'll say to you, I remember we did have this discussion about it's better to lose. You know, you're better off, the Mets are better off losing with young kids. First of all, you have to admit that even though this year the Mets will probably wind up with a very similar record as they had in 2011, you have to admit this year has been a lot more fun. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this was a much more enjoyable and likable team. And a big part of that had to do with the fact that it was a lot of young kids on the team. You know, it's easier to root for that.
Right. And, I mean, even going back, I mean, there have been so many interesting stories in 2012 with the Mets. I mean, the first no-hitter was huge. The first no-hitter in Mets history. It's 50th anniversary, blah, blah, blah. But, you know,
Ari Dickey is as good a story as there is in baseball. You can't be a human and not root for Ari Dickey.
Yeah, but, you know, if you look at that no-hitter game, a kid who grew up in Whitestone, Queens, 15 minutes away from Flushing, broke his shoulder making a game-saving catch, making a no-hitter-saving catch. He'll never have to buy a beer in this town again. He'll never have to buy dinner in this town again. But it just goes to show that when you put the young kids out there, they never know when their next meal is going to be. So
right.
In a way, you know what, I kind of say congratulations to that. But, you know, I don't think, even though the Mets had nothing to do with that trade, somehow the Mets kind of, no controversy is complete without the Mets getting involved somehow.
Right.
And you probably know where I'm going. The Kelly Shopik using Aegon Cell, to text ownership about growing dissatisfaction with Bobby Valentine. I thought it was hilarious because, of course, they're going to point to the guy that's no longer on the team. You know,
right.
And what's he going to say? Oh, yeah, I sent it. No, he's not going to throw his teammates under the bus, even if it did happen, which chances are it didn't.
Of course
and,
it didn't.
Yeah,
of
and I mean, what's going on? A backup catcher who's no longer with the team using the starting first baseman's phone. Come on, that is such,
yeah.
such a funny story.
I wrote about that on Bleacher Report. There's two things I want to hit. First of all, Kelly Shopik, I wrote about this on Bleacher Report, that nothing about that story made sense. And it reminded me of, like, when a kid is lying to get out of trouble and they haven't really thought out the whole story, but he's sticking to the story.
Right.
In order for that story to happen, this is what must have happened. Adrian Gonzalez must have said, you know what, I'm really not happy with the way things are going. So, Kelly Shopik, come over here. Here's my cell phone. Send a text, not from me, but using my phone number. And I'm going to walk outside the room. You text whatever you want. Use my phone. That must have happened in order for this story to make sense. Or Kelly Shopik must have stolen the phone. And said, I'm going to send a text, and everyone's going to think it's from Adrian Gonzalez and not me, Kelly Shopik. Neither of those scenarios make sense. The only scenario that does make sense is Gonzalez sent that not thinking that anyone was going to find out because he's used to playing in San Diego where the local beat writers say, the Padres, they're baseball, right? And not realizing the severity of what this could snowball into, and everyone looked around and said, well, we got to pin this on someone. Well, what? And someone blurted out, what about Kelly Shopik? He's not here. So it made absolutely no sense. And you know what? In some ways, in retrospect, that was what made dealing Gonzalez a little easier. Because you're like, oh, he's a weasel.
Right.
He's a little weasel. And a lot of people, especially people like me who are not the most religious people in the world, were a bit ticked off when he said at the end of last year, well, God didn't want the Red Sox to win the division or didn't want to get into the playoffs. Now, first of all, there's a certain amount of, no, it had more to do with the pitching than the supreme creator of the universe. And whether or not you believe in a God or not, and this is not the podcast to discuss that, if there is a creator of the universe, he's dealing with quasars and black holes and folding galaxies. He's not saying, there's a three-game series in Tampa Bay. I'm going to go squash that for the Red Sox. You know? So, I mean, that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but I think there's a weaselly quality to what happened with that, which just made me think, you know what, good, get these guys out of here. Get these guys out of here. I'll tell you something that is a parallel and why I specifically brought up the Mets and the Cubs. In 2000 and in that area, around 2006 to 2008, both of the teams, the Cubs and the Mets, pushed the proverbial chips to the center of the table. The Mets spent big money. The Cubs spent big money. The Mets signed guys to long-term deals. The Cubs did the same thing because they felt they had a window of opportunity of a championship that they could not let slip away, that they could not let say, you know what, we can't look our fan base in the eye and say, we had a chance to win in Wrigley Field. We had a chance to win with what looked like the Yankees were starting to go down, that the Mets had a chance to take over the city. I mean, if we go back in time, that was the mindset. The Yankees are declining. And the Mets are on the rise. This could be a chance to be like the mid-'80s when the Mets owned the team, owned the city. And the Cubs had a chance to, you know, they saw the Red Sox win the World Series, they saw the White Sox win the World Series, and like, okay, it's our turn. And they felt they had a chance to do it, so they spent big money. And what happened was, is they didn't. The Mets fell on their face, the Cubs fell on their face, and they were stuck with these big, huge contracts.
Yeah.
Fast forward, the Red Sox pushed their chips in the center of the table. They foolishly signed Beckett to that long-term deal. They brought in Lackey. They brought in Crawford. They brought in Gonzalez. And with this mentality of, we're going to have our greatest team ever. And when that fell on its face, and they said, not only the greatest team ever, the fans are turning against these guys. They did what the Cubs and Mets should have done. Now, what the Red Sox, and again, this is where my Los Angeles, living in Los Angeles, comes into play here. The Red Sox found a team that was in the mindset that the Cubs and Mets were in 2007, and that was the Dodgers.
Right.
And the Dodgers, I'm sorry if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but the way this worked was the way that it wasn't a Carl Crawford for, Vernon Wells or a, Beckett in exchange for Barry Zito. I mean, it wasn't sort of trade bad contract for bad contract. The way that they were able to dump it off is the Dodgers are in that mentality right now. And the Red Sox took advantage of them. And I am absolutely convinced that in a year or two, this trade is going to be looked upon as one of the biggest blunders in baseball history by the Dodgers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I was on my other podcast last night, the Cult of Mets Personalities, and I actually brought that up, you know, that nobody is really saying that because the Dodgers are in a position to win now. And, you know, they also have the luxury of playing in a relatively weak division. It's just them and the Giants right now. And they have an opportunity.
Yeah.
And they have new owners who are concerned with back page headlines and winning the back pages. And,
right.
You know, they have money to burn that they can absorb those bad contracts. And that's something that kind of got to me, where if you look at a team like the Yankees, probably – I don't think that they're hated so much universally by their non-fans because they spend money. It's because they're very good at hiding their bad contracts. I mean, look at A.J. Burnett.
Right.
They're paying him to win a bunch of games in Pittsburgh. And I know, you know, you and I know Lisa Swan, and she's one of those people that was very vocally against that. And I know plenty of people who were too. But – you know what? Hey, they have the luxury of being able to do that, and the Dodgers do right now. So, you know, it'll be a short-term Dodgers, long-term Red Sox. I'm with you on that one.
I'll tell you, though, it may not even be short-term Dodgers, and I'll tell you why. The Dodgers, they won today. They won big. Actually, they did win big. They won 10-8. They were up 10-1, and they won 10-8.
Oh.
But they lost three of the first four games after the trade was made. And they are still behind. If the playoffs ended today, the Dodgers would be playing golf. They are behind the Giants. They are behind the two wild card teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a brutal schedule. They play St. Louis. They play Washington. They play the Giants six more times. Meanwhile, the Giants, besides the six games they have with the Dodgers, every team they play is under 500. Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The Giants' schedule is softer than soft, and the Dodgers' schedule is brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And the Giants have a better pitching staff right now.
Right.
And the Giants have a chip on their shoulder in the wake of the Melky Cabrera suspension. The Giants came in and beat the tar out of the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. They swept them out of their own building. And, it may not – there is a possibility that the Dodgers may miss the playoffs this year.
Right. No,
it's a real possibility they could do that, especially if the pieces don't all fit together. Because, gee whiz, we thought the pieces were going to fit together in Boston. So you know, you may, at least the Mets got a playoff appearance out of it. The Cubs got a couple of playoff appearances out of it. There's a real possibility. Now, they could click and the Dodgers could go far. But there's a real possibility that this team may not even make the playoffs that is expanded. Now,
right.
one of the reasons, and living here in Southern California, you really get a sense of one of the reasons why this trade was necessary, or why a huge move like this was necessary. I think it's a huge mistake that they brought in Crawford's contract. I think it's a huge mistake they brought in Beckett's contract. They're enamored by Adrian Gonzalez, and especially having someone to protect Matt Kemp in the lineup. But you don't understand how much hatred there was for the Dodgers this year, or last year, with Frank McCourt, with the bankruptcy, with finding out all the money that was not being put into the Dodgers, that he was using the team as his own ATM machine. And the fact that this place is Laker crazy, and the Lakers are bringing in Steve Nash and Dwight Howard. The place is, USC's sanctions are finally lifted from them, so you're going to have USC as the top-ranked college football team. The Kings are the NBA champions. There's a huge Clipper following, especially because of Blake Griffin. So there's, if the Dodgers are not putting an interest, not just a good product on the field, because, you know, yell at McCourt all you want. He put three playoff teams on the field, but a interesting playoff team on the field, then no one's going to pay attention. And they just spent a couple of $1 billion on the team and are negotiating a multi-billion-dollar deal with Fox. So it is important to keep the eyeballs on the Dodgers. That's why they put Magic Johnson, probably has as much to do with the day-to-day operations of the Dodgers as you do. But they put him right up front because everyone in L.A. loves Magic.
Right.
But no, we
got
Magic now. You know, he's not a Laker. He's like, look, he's wearing a Dodger hat. You know, I wrote that the Dwight Howard trade made the Adrian Gonzalez trade a necessity.
Yeah.
It wasn't
necessarily
a baseball move. It was a keep the Dodgers in everyone, keep people talking about the Dodgers.
Uh-huh.
So the Red Sox took advantage of that. I completely feel that way because the Dodgers are in a position where they just spent billions of dollars on a product and they got to make it a billion-dollar product. They need to be the Yankees of the West. They made the Hanley Ramirez trade. They were going to try to trade for Cole Hamels.
Yeah, whom I adore.
I know. Oh, yeah, he's your favorite. He's your favorite guy. I love Paul.
Send him into the Pacific Ocean for all I care. You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast on NDB Media Sports Blog Talk Radio. I'm Taryn the Coop Cooper. My guest is Sully from Sully Baseball. I kind of cut you off there. I thought you were done.
It's your show. You can do whatever you want.
Okay. Well, you know what? I kind of wanted to change gears here because I know that you're not just analyzing Red Sox baseball. You know, you are kind of a jack of all trades for all teams, and you're very knowledgeable about all the intricacies, and you're talking about it on the Bleacher Report now. And we're getting to the end of the season, you know, and you just brought up some very interesting topics with, you know, the Dodgers may not make the playoffs, and it's a very distinct possibility. But, you know, one of the interesting stories that have emerged this season were the Washington Nationals riding their young gun Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper into October, hopefully for their fans. I happen to know all of the coolest Washington Nationals fans. It's ridiculous. But, you know, you wrote an article on the quote unquote pitch count ceiling for Strasburg. I think it's dumb. But, you know, it's something that really needs to be discussed. And you wrote about, you know, why he's pitching in blowout games when there is this, you know, ceiling of a pitch count looming over him that could possibly affect the team going into September. I mean, the Braves aren't too far behind them in the East.
Well, I think that there's a couple of things. I wrote another piece today about that subject. It's been kind of a pet subject for me. I came up with a couple of scenarios during the year, which was, well, maybe they can have him throw about four innings a week, like two innings on Tuesday, two innings on Thursday. You know, like, you know, have him come out, just sort of like stretch him out that way. because having him, at least having him on a playoff roster in a limited role, is better than having him in no role. I wrote a thing today on Bleacher Report on this topic, and I think one of the biggest mistakes that Mike Rizzo, the general manager of the Washington Nationals, made was that he said what they were going to do during spring training in Vieira this February. That he said, we're going to put him on an innings limit. When we're done, he's going to stop pitching. Now, I can understand he's coming off of Tommy John surgery. They want him to be the next Tom Seaver. And in their minds, they're thinking, you know what? In 2012, they finished one game under 500 in 2011. In 2012, they'll probably have a winning season. And by 2013, they'll be a pennant contender with a fully healthy Strasburg leading the way. The problem is the contention happened a year early. They were kind of caught off guard. Like, a very positive thing happened, which was the Nationals took advantage of the Phillies stinking and the Marlins stinking.
Mm-hmm.
No one predicted both of those teams were going to stink. But when it happened, and it put the Nationals in front in the division, it put them in a position they were not prepared for. Like, they thought they were probably – I bet they thought, gun to your head, they thought, we're going to win 84 to 85 games. And if that were the case, and they may have been on the periphery of a wild card chase, shutting down Strasburg would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Don't blow the kid's arm out for a ill-fated wild card run. Just, shut him down, and you'll be in great shape next year. But as you know, especially as you brought up the 2006 Mets, there's sometimes – The combination of events that could lead to a team going far in the playoffs sometimes is so rare that you can't blow that opportunity.
Right.
And the Nationals are finding themselves in the team as a team right now. The team that's constituted is probably playing the best base. They're on a little bit of a losing streak right now, but you put them in a short series, I picked them to go to the World Series.
Right.
Something that the city of Washington has not witnessed since 1933. And if you consider that most of the fans there probably became Baltimore Oriole fans after the Senators left, well, then it's been since 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Was the last time the Orioles were in the World Series. So this is even if you assume that they're all, they're Oriole fans who put put the W hats on, this is
right.
The first time in a generation and a half that there's this region has had a legit chance to see a World Series.
Yeah.
And everything clicking together. You don't know the Phillies could be better next year. The Marlins could be better next year. The pitching for the Nationals may be down next year. It could be a fluky season. Even a team like the White Sox, which had so much talent in 2005, it really all came together just that one year.
Mm-hmm.
And so to throw this in the cesspool, to say we're going to take away, like, okay, you know, like using the Mets example, so let's go to the 86 World, let's go to the 86 postseason, and we're going to remove Ron Darling. You're not going to use Ron Darling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we choose not to use him. And, like, whoa, we need him. No, we're choosing because we want a long year. We're thinking about the future. The future, you have a chance to win the World Series.
Right, right.
I think that if they take Strasburg out, I would pick the Reds to go to the World Series.
Right,
I think Strasburg
right.
in. I think Washington goes to the World Series. So you're banking, you're risking. This is the general, if they do this, the general manager is risking a legit chance to go to the World Series, thinking, all right, we're going to throw this fish back in because there's an even bigger fish out there.
Right.
And if it works and they wind up winning two or three World Series this decade in Strasburg, then he'll look like a genius. But if it doesn't, it'll be his reputation on the line. And I think the worst thing they ever did was make it public. I said I'm sorry to go on this little tangent here, but what I wrote in Bleacher Report is the equivalent of someone proclaiming they're going on a diet. I'm going on a diet. I'm going to be so thin. then a month and a half goes by, and 2 months go by. They still got the belly. You see them eating a brownie. They go like, but you're on a diet. What's that all about? Or someone say, I'm quitting smoking. This is it. Say goodbye to cigarettes. This is, I'm throwing them away. And then 3 weeks later, you catch them sneaking a smoke outside. Oh, I thought you quit. Didn't you make a big pronouncement? What you just do is you quit. And if you happen to fall off, you have to have a moment of weakness. It's not a public thing. Like, okay, I got to work on it. Got to work on it. And they should have treated it the same way. They made the Nationals made the same mistake every dieter and smoker makes. And they made the same mistake.
Right. Right. It's funny. I mean, I'm very close to the NL East. I follow a lot of it. I mean, you know, I see each of the teams as a fan of the Mets 18 times a year. And, I mean, the thing that really kind of I see glimpses of it in Washington now, like you said, I think that's a great analogy, say it, making it public, making sure people knew about it. It was stupid. And it's funny that you mentioned Ron Darling, because Ron Darling was on the air, and I thought he was going to shit himself. He was so angry at that. He's like, we're babying pitchers. And Ron isn't an angry guy. I mean, he's very eloquent. You know, he went to Yale for crying out loud. Yeah, yeah, he's just, he's very, like, very laid back. And he flipped his lid when he heard that. And, you know, you look at someone like J.B. Johnson, who has a great reputation with young players, gets guys motivated, and you know, the other day, I don't know if you read about this, but apparently he and Rizzo had some words, and he basically told Rizzo, well, if you want to come down here and manage this team, come right down and do it, and hung up the phone in his ear. That somehow Strasburg might have been part of that conversation, or I think it was in response to, you know, you mentioned that they had a few, you know, losing games here and there, but I think that, you know, it had to do with something of a, you know, kind of an embarrassing loss. But you know what? I feel like it's a win-win. I mean, Strasburg's arm, yeah, you know what? You want to ensure it for the future, but like you said, the future could be right now, and they're riding, you know, a very weak NL East this year, and it's them and the Braves. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing how that's going to turn out. But, you know, I'm going to round up here with, you know, bringing a topic near and dear to your heart is the AL East. And, you know, right now, you know, you mentioned the Orioles before. Nobody really expected the Orioles to kind of, you know, be in the thick of, after All-Star break, I was kind of predicting them to have what the Mets are doing right now, which, you know, is not being too successful, but you know they seem to be, you know, I mean they helped the Red Sox, they dashed the Red Sox hopes last year in game 162, and
I
now
remember.
They're just two losses behind the Yankees in the L column, and you know they've been falling apart too. You know they've been losing players to injury. It's and then there's the Rays, and you know that you can't discount them. Throw in the second wild card. This shit's about to get real in the AL.
Yeah, it's about to get real, real. And I'll tell you something about the Yankees. And again, this is going to just sound like I'm an angry Red Sox fan, but they got to look out because if let's say Baltimore wins tonight. Let's say they beat the White Sox, okay? And then the Yankees play Baltimore in Baltimore for the next three games. If Baltimore wins the series, if they win today and then take two out of three against the Yankees, remember, they're not facing C.C. Sabathia in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, the Orioles will be one game back in the loss column in September. And the Yankees' starting rotation is not that impressive.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't.
No.
Sabathia has been ordinary since coming back from his injury. Pettit's not even throwing on a mound yet, which is, you know, we're in late. It's going to be September in a couple of days. You may want to throw on a mound in September if you want to pitch in October. Nova stinks. Kuroda's okay. Kuroda's had some very good games, but he's been up and down. Hughes has been better, but this is not an extraordinary pitching staff that they have. And they got to look out because if they fall back to within and make it a scrum, where they fall back with the wild card teams, you have a bunch of teams like the Rays, like the Orioles, like the A's, like the White Sox, who are all teams filled with young players who have absolutely no pressure on them. The Rays had expectations, but the Orioles, A's, and White Sox have no expectations on them. And those are really dangerous teams to play if you're a team like the Yankees, because the Yankees are a team, if they lose Game 7 of the World Series in the bottom of the ninth, their season is a failure.
Mm-hmm.
If the Orioles finish the season with a winning record, they're going to pop out champagne and have a parade. So the pressure that is on the Yankees, especially with a depleted pitching staff, if they get to the point where they're going into mid-September, only a game or so ahead of some of these other teams, and these other teams are playing fast, loose, with good young pitcher. I mean, the A's seem like they have 20 good young pitchers on their team.
Yeah.
Then this could be a very, very dangerous year for the Yankees. Now, I think the Yankees are going to win the division. I don't think they're going anywhere in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Right.
And I also think that there is going to be a team, maybe two teams, in the American League playoffs who you look up and go, wow, I don't even know half the names on this roster.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I can see that happening, yeah.
Yeah. I mean the Orioles are a perfect example. The Orioles have a run. I mean, I got into an argument with a guy about run differential because he was saying, don't worry about the Orioles. They have a bad run differential. And I said, so what? I said, well, that's a better way of gauging a team than win-loss record. I said, bullshit. So if you have a three-game series and you win two of the games 2-1 and you lose one of the games 10-0, you have a terrible run differential. But guess what? You won two of the games. I mean,
right.
these people who break down things into the new step, and who the guy actually said, no, don't look at win-loss record, look at run differential. And I said, no, I'm going to look at win-loss records. Because that's
right.
How we determine who is in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the Orioles have a terrible, it's like negative something run differential. And yet they're winning. And to me, that makes them scarier.
Yeah.
Because they win games they're not supposed to win. And that's a scary team.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know why the Orioles are winning. You know why the Orioles are winning. And I've been saying this for years. I made the video about it. They went back to the smiling bird hat. I was right. The smiling bird cap is what did it. The sideways birds, they sucked. The first year to go back to the smiling bird cap, they're breathing down the Yankees' throat. Am I wrong?
Yep. You're not wrong. You called it all along. That's hilarious. I forgot about that, but I do remember reading it. That's great. That's really great.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's talk about what you're doing, because you and I met through Sully Baseball, and now you're a big-time writer for Bleacher Report. Tell me about how that came about.
Oh, I just started, you know, submitting. They have a little area where you can just submit some stuff if you're a normal person. But you have to go through the editor and everything. You know, you're not going to be a lunatic. And I just started typing, and I started submitting a lot of my stuff to them, and they started thinking I was pretty good. So I make an effort to write about teams that are not – they're not. I make an effort to write about every team, mainly because for selfish reasons, but also for reasons that make the season more enjoyable for me. The selfish reasons are, is, you know, you get more attention if you're the number one Marlins writer, because everyone wants to submit. Everyone's submitting articles for the Red Sox, but you know, hey, there's some fun things about the Marlins to write about. But the other thing is that if you're too provincial in baseball, you miss a lot of great stuff. You know, the White Sox have fascinating stories. The Oakland A's are the most fun team in baseball. No team comes close to putting a more entertaining product on the field than the Oakland A's. The one thing they don't have are recognizable names. But if you watch Oakland A's games, if you turn on your MLB network thing or whatever and the A's are playing, watch it. Something fun's going to happen. Someone's going to make a great catch. Someone's going to do a walk-off hit. And Bleacher Report's really helped me follow some of the other teams that I wouldn't normally put this much attention to. And it makes the season go by, makes it so much more enjoyable, especially when my team stinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people get too provincial. wrestle with baseball. And I wish they didn't, because they're not that way with football. Football is much more of a national team sport. So you have more people following other teams from out of the market. But I think baseball can be the same way, and I love doing that. And it's been, it's been a blast. You know, I've been called an idiot. I've been called all sorts of names in the comments section. My favorite thing is that I wrote a thing about the Red Sox. I did write a Red Sox column. And a guy wrote in saying, "Did you do any research on this column?" And he pointed out the thing. And the thing that was hilarious is the stuff that he was pointing out was factually wrong, and I was factually correct.
Right.
I pointed that out, and I said, "If you did your research, you would have known that."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's fun when your critics are wrong.
Well, right, and not to mention, you know. It's funny. I have a philosophy that if you don't have, if there is a faux Twitter account named after you, if you have somebody in your comments section calling you an idiot, you have people trying to call you out on stuff, and then they go berserk when you call them out on something wrong. You've made it. You've made it as a blogger. You've made it as some kind of so-called expert. So congratulations. I've been called worse.
I have one goal. I get thrilled when I get called an idiot and people yell at me. But I have one goal. And as a baseball writer, and as I work my way up and try to get more and more paid gigs on this whole thing, I have one goal, which is to have someone set up a blog account called Sully Sucks, and it be all about what I did wrong. And if that happens, if someone does that, I'm going to break out the champagne. I'm going to look in the mirror and say, "Sullivan, good job. You're there. Welcome."
Oh, hey, you know what? If that's that's all you need, I'll buy that domain name right now. No, I'm kidding.
Think I suck, though. You don't think
I
suck.
I know. I don't.
And I
think
don't think you suck. I don't think we. This is a mutual admiration society between Sully and the Coop.
Awesome. All right. You know what? Let's tie things up. Besides Bleacher Report, where can we find you?
Go to SullyBaseball.blogspot.com. Or just type in Sully Baseball in a Google search. You'll see all sorts of things of mine. I have other things that I'm planning to do soon, but go to those places and just type in Sully Baseball in your Google. You'll find me. And check out on Bleacher Report, type in my name, Paul Francis Sullivan. I am the most read Angels and Marlins writer for July. We'll see how I rank in August.
Oh, sweet. I love reading about the Angels. The Angels are probably my team that I kind of have this admiration for that I'd love to write about. So probably should.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. We broached a big range of topics, and you're always welcome on whenever you want.
All right, Coop. And there'll be an 86 World Series rematch eventually.
Yeah, I hope not. Just don't call your uncle out in Jersey to taunt him.
Oh, I know. All right, talk to you, Coop.
All right, thanks, man. All right. And that was Paul Francis Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully from Sully Baseball and Bleacher Report. Really great writer, really awesome guy. If you're not reading him, well, why aren't you? I'm the Coop. You're listening to the Gal for All Seasons podcast here on MVB Media Sports and Block Talk Radio. We're out of time. I'm about to go watch the Mets play the Phillies. Unfortunately, I can't boo Cole Hamels from my couch tonight. That's okay. You can find me at Coops22, COOPZ22 on Twitter. My website is galforallseasons.com. And you can find me here every Wednesday, 7 o'clock Eastern Time. And that's about it. Have a great night, everyone. Bye.